Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Here from beautiful, warm Lexington, Kentucky. We're supposed to hit 80 degrees today.
That's awesome. It's a reversal because it rained all day here in Phoenix yesterday. I am Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to the award-winning Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for March 22nd, 2011, episode 102, sponsored by Pfizer Animal Health. Good morning, Horse World.
Do you know what today is?
No, what?
Yeah!
What day is it? Tell me!
It's Tuesday!
I can't believe it! I just don't believe it!
Feels like Tuesday.
Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
Howdy, Jamis. How are you?
Howdy, Glenn. I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing?
Okay. Are you so happy you don't have to play the harmonica and the guitar today?
I did wake up a little less stressed out. So, and it's funny because Chad hadn't heard me play in forever, and he's like, "How did you do that?" I'm like, "I practiced for 4 minutes yesterday, and it was." It worked. It sounded just like I practiced for 4 minutes.
And actually, you know, you had a lot of comments on Facebook. People really liked you coming out of your musical shell there on the show yesterday.
Well, the sound quality on this system is so crystal clear that I'm sure it sounded awesome. See, I could have been playing completely different instruments, and I think nobody would have known.
Well, you know, I did send out a little message to your friend there, Lindsay, and told her that she needed to listen to the last 5 minutes of yesterday's show.
That's about it, though.
Yeah. Well, and if anybody didn't listen to yesterday's show, you're going to want to go back and listen to the last 5 minutes. You can listen to the whole thing if you want, but the last 5 minutes is where Jamie made her musical debut here on the Horse Radio Network.
Yes. It was awesome.
Well, let's go right to Jennifer today and find out what we're doing, what we're talking about, what's going on.
What is going on today's show? We are going to start out with a how to get your college degree and do horse stuff too segment. That's going to be our gal Sarah Coleman with the Georgetown College Equine Scholars Program. Too much coffee for me. She's going to have some really interesting stuff to talk about there. The Georgetown College is a college here in the Lexington, Kentucky area. And then we will enjoy a nice musical interlude, Compliments of Marianne Kennedy. But stay tuned, because we're not done yet. Rounding out the show, we've got Lisa Wysocki with the top 10 safety mistakes committed by horse folks. I suspect I've committed some of these. This will be fun to see how I score.
I suspect I've committed all of them, actually.
It's going to be educational at best.
We can relate. I think everybody out there is going to be able to relate to that. Lisa's fun, so this ought to be an interesting segment. Well, we do have a daily Winnie for today. Today's Daily Winnie goes out to Rebecca for posting all of the air show pics. She was also at the air show that Jamie was at over the weekend, and she posted a bunch of pictures from the air show, and it really made me want to go to an air show again. It's been years since we've been to one, and I'm just dying to go again.
Well, you only have to wait 2 more years for it to show up here in Phoenix. So book your tickets now.
Well, we the last thing I went to that was sort of an air show, they did some air show stuff, was in Reading, Pennsylvania. They have a fantastic, one of the best in the country, World War II reenactment. You know how the guys get together and do the Civil War reenactments? Well, they do World War II reenactments, too. And
Wow. They
have thousands of people dressed up as, you know, Germans and Americans and British and Australians. And they have airplanes there, and they fire cannons, and they shoot machine guns, and they have mock war battles, and they set up a whole town, and they have a mock battle in the town. And then they also, the coolest thing about this that I thought was really neat was they shoot flamethrowers, and they show you what that's like. And, man, a day, we were standing about 200 yards away, and let me tell you, that they put off some heat with the flamethrowers. I wouldn't have wanted to be on the wrong end of that baby.
No, definitely not. Well, that's cool.
So I got some great pictures from the time we were there at the World War II reenactment. That was a lot of fun. I don't think the war was much fun, but the reenactment was kind of cool.
Well, that's a cool thing about this air show is they actually have they do a flyover where they link up four planes and they put the four planes in formation. And one is a World War II plane, and one is from the Korean War, one is from Vietnam, and then one is like a present-day plane, and they all fly in formation. And
oh, cool.
So it's kind of like it represents, you know, the past and the future, and it's a really kind of emotional deal. And then, they start playing, you know, the national anthem behind it, and you're like, oh, my God, I love my country. I love America. It totally gets you. It does. So, but it is funny going to an Air Force function when the national anthem is played because every man – we were at a dinner, and there was a band playing, and I guess the band was – really excited it was playing an Air Force function or whatever, and they played the national anthem twice in their set list. And when you play the national anthem around a bunch of military people, they immediately stop what they're doing and they stand at attention. And say, I mean, I'm not used to that. And I'm like, so Jack, you want to get a drink? What do you want? What kind of beer do you want? Okay. A hand of the heart. Face the flag. I'm like, hey, what kind of beer do you want? I'm the only one talking.
Do they give classes on how to be an officer's wife? Because you are just so not officer's wife material.
You know, if they did, I'm sure that the other officers' wives would appreciate it if I would sign up. because
you need like a crash course.
I do. I don't know how to do any of this stuff. But some of these women are so good at it. They do what they're supposed to do, and they're amazing wives. And I'm like, what kind of beer do you want, honey? The national anthem is playing. So, yeah, I'm a horse person at heart, you know. There's not much room for anything else, I guess, is what it boils down to.
Well, what rank is he again? What rank is Chad?
He's a major.
Yeah, see, he's a major. See, that's pretty major, actually. And, you know, that puts you up there in horsewifedom.
Yeah, people actually salute him and stuff. I think it's hilarious. I'm like, oh, that was cool. I'm like,
you
do
don't
that
salute
again.
Him? You don't salute him every day when he comes home? You know, give him a little.
Hello, sir.
Yeah, that must be freaky, though, you know, because you're newlyweds and everything, and you don't hang around the base all that much, so it must be freaky when you're at functions and stuff, and people are saluting your husband. That must be kind of weird.
Because
he's like your husband. You hang out with him, you know. You see him drink beer, and, you know, you see him at his most disgusting, and then you see him all spiffied up at functions, and they're saluting him, and you're going, what?
Yeah, I think it's funny. And then they have to do all these little things, like they have to wear this hat when they walk outside the door, but they can't wear the hat when they're on the flight line. And then they have when you walk into the building, you have to take the hat off. I'm like, what? I can't keep up with all that stuff. I don't know how you know how to do all that. Thank God they send them to officer school, so they learn all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, the wives, I don't think they do any training. I should look into that probably. I'd be a better wife.
I guess you just learn it, you know. And, the key word, I think, with officers' wives probably is cordial. You have to be cordial all the time.
I better work on that.
By the way, you want to look that one up first and then maybe
make sure I have the right definition.
Yeah. I didn't say cordials or drink cordials. I said be cordial. There's a difference.
Oh, that's not booze?
No, I just thought I'd throw that out, you know, that there is a difference between the two.
I'm telling Glenn, I've been to some officers' wives' functions, and there's, like, you know, a couple bottles of wine on the counter, you know, a couple reds, and I'm like, well, sweet. So I go to open a bottle of wine, pour a glass, and look around, and there's, like, every other wife in there is having water. I'm like, hello, I'm the drunk. That's great. Why would you bring wine and not drink it? I don't understand. Why would you do that? Story of my life. I'm like, sweet, they got a good cab, 2007. I'm like, chug, chug. Wait, hello? Anybody else? Anybody wants them? No? Okay.
Chad must be so proud.
He really is, actually. He thinks it's awesome. move on. Okay. Is there any news?
Houston Rodeo. Remember we were talking about the Houston Rodeo? Well, they were done now, and there was a report that came out on the numbers from the Houston Rodeo. And I got to tell you, remember we Alan talked about it when he called in, and you know we just talked a lot about the Houston Rodeo because it's a big deal. And the numbers are staggering from this year. Listen to this: nearly 2.2 million people attended the 3-week event, about 5% higher than last year's record. So they set a new record for the number of people attending. The rodeo cook-off, that's the, you know, whole cook-off barbecue challenge competition thing.
Mm-hmm.
244,000 people. First of all, how the hell do you even feed 244,000 people?
How do you cook that much?
I know. I know. And then, you know, talk about doing it bigger in Texas. That broke last year's record of 221,000. There were 20,000 people more than last year. Wow. I'll tell you what. Listen to this. Several of this year's auctions also shattered records, including the wine auction. Speaking of wine, that's what made me think of this when you're talking about wine. Brought in $1.7 million selling wine. The junior auctions, including poultry and school art, brought in, are you ready for this? $8.8 million. Where else can you go in the horse world where they have a poultry and school art auction that brings in $8.8 million? That's just out of this world. And then that was an increase last year of $1 million. And then in 2011, the event featured roughly 300 exhibitors, 27,000 livestock and horse show entries, and a rodeo purse of about $1.5 million.
Well,
that's just
how long? How many days is it? 16 days?
It's 3 weeks.
Oh, 3 weeks long. Wow.
But,
I wonder how many changeovers they have where, you know, how everybody has to move out to make room for the next group of competitors.
Just, you know, I know. It's just amazing. The bull riding champion this year actually won $61,350.
And endless amount of resources a mental exercise, but
We have somebody talking. I don't know where that's coming from.
It's coming from. Okay, I made it go away. I pressed the magic button.
Okay, I don't know where that was coming from, to be honest with you. And I think we've lost Jamie at the same time.
Oh yeah, she'll come back. She's dependable.
She'll be back.
She'll come back. No worries.
So I don't know what happened there, but another thing I wanted to bring up, which was kind of funny, was that I found this outrageous Hollywood casting calls, and I thought this was a chuckle and has nothing to do with horses except for one little section here. But this was actual casting calls, and we have somebody that we know that's an actor and actually goes out on casting calls all the time and does auditions and things like that all the time. So I found, Jennifer, these outrageous casting calls that are real ones from Hollywood. And
I was reading through those. Some of those.
I know. For True Blood, which I think was a horror movie, wasn't it? They needed, this is actually what they requested, frighteningly skinny people, male or female, ages 18 to 70. Only submit if you are borderline emaciated. Please note on your submission if you would consider doing nudity for a higher rate. Okay.
Ew.
So now we're going to get to see nude, really, really skinny people. So I thought that one was interesting.
Yeah, but, that's gross. I heard
yeah,
that. Thanks, I'm
good.
Back.
You're back. Welcome back.
Yeah, sorry.
And then, but you know, he makes a good point when he talks about here on the blog that lunch breaks would be pretty short for that group. And then there's a Citizens Bank commercial that needed a double-jointed hand model, male, age 20 to 50, double-jointed where the thumb and the pointer finger can bend backward to the wrist. Now, what bank commercial is going to need a guy who can do gross things with his hand?
Okay, is it me or who, how many people are trying that right now?
I actually tried it when I read it, I got to be honest. And I didn't even get close. You get close? I can't get close.
No, I'm about 6 inches away. That's pretty gross if you could do that. But I guess, isn't that what they call being double-jointed? So
Yes. Here's a bizarre one for the movie Trooper. Amputee hand double, male 18 to 100, looking for anyone that has missing fingers on either hand. Oh, by the way, that was open to union and non-union actors. So there you go.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, here's one for a commercial, looking for Hispanic men 18 to 45 that are willing to wear nothing but a loincloth.
Oh, gross. I don't need to know. Well, it depends. If you look like Hispanic Enrique Iglesias, hello, purr. I'm sorry, he's like the hottest man ever. I know it's weird.
Here's one that actually involves horses. This was for a Snow White promotional trailer. Get that. Okay, you're listening closely. Snow White. And it's here, this is what it said. We are looking for a male little person, 25 to 50, all ethnicities, who can ride a miniature horse. The director will be hiring two little people. Horse riding experience is a must.
Yeah, Snow White and the Seven Little People, now that we're politically correct. Are they going to change that in Disney, you think?
Yeah, I don't know. That's true. I don't know. I think I have to change the title. This is a funny one. It's a Kia commercial. Listen closely. Looking for male or female Mayan extras, 18 and over. Screen Actors Guild members only. Piercings a plus. Well,
for Kia?
Do I remember my history right? Aren't the Mayans all dead? Like a long time ago? Or are there actually Mayans left?
I've been to the Mayan ruins in Mexico.
Did you see any Mayans wandering around that are Screen Actors Guild members and have piercings?
I didn't see any pierced Screen Actors Guild certified Mayan people walking around, but that's probably why they're looking so hard for them.
Here's one. We'll end on this one. And then you have a story related to this, I think. The next one is called Zoo. It's a feature film. And they're looking for males or females 20 to 55 who can resemble zoo animals.
What?
This is what it says. A guy who resembles a bear would go into the bear cage. A lady that could look like a peacock. There's so many jokes here. Will walk to see the peacocks, and this will take a little work on your part, it says. Yeah, no kidding. First of all, I have never seen a woman with feathers sticking out her butt. I've never seen that. So looking like a peacock is going to be a little tough. But that did, the whole zoo thing brought me to one of your stories, which was probably a little less vile than that whole list there.
And less bizarre. That was just weird. I don't know where you find your information. It's just amazing. Google is a fantastic world.
Yes, it is.
Well, this story is actually pretty sweet. It's sad and sweet at the same time. The Auckland Zoo lost an elephant, and I guess there was a pair of elephants, and it was Burma and her companion Kashin, and they lost Kashin in 2009, and I guess Burma has not been doing very well because elephants are like horses, extremely social herd animals. So the Auckland Zoo is working very hard to find a replacement elephant or two or 10 they're actually looking at getting to come out and hang out with Burma. But in the meanwhile, guess what they did for Burma? They got her an 11-year-old horse, a mare named Cherry, and they're trying to bond the horse and the elephant together. Apparently, because the zoo has done so many studies on the relationships between horses and in herds and elephants in herds, that it could be very similar. So they have now turned a horse out with Burma the elephant to see if they're going to be companions. So it's going to take a couple years for them to get a couple more elephants. So they're working on it, and they're trying. So we will probably try, you know, we'll try to keep you up to date on that and see how it's going. But I guess they have a lot of daily activities that the elephant has to do, and they're just going to have the horse tag along with everything. Lead the elephant, and then lead the horse right behind her. So that's pretty cool, and I think it's a neat idea.
Is the horse learning to eat peanuts?
I know, right? Well, I was wondering if the horse is going to grab the elephant by the tail and walk. And yes, horses will eat peanuts. Wouldn't that be cool to see like a little line of elephants with like a horse in the middle? Somebody's grabbed the horse's tail and he's grabbed the elephant's tail in front of him. Like, aw, that's so cute.
I see a Disney movie.
Now, there is a picture of the horse, and the horse looks like he's been eating very well. He's kind of a chunky boy.
The horse, it is definitely a lifestyle change probably for most horses, especially here in Phoenix. This horse is in grass up to its knees. I'm like, if you want to keep little Cherry alive, you better get a Beaker's, muzzle.
Well, we have Beaker's muzzle on, let me tell you. Beaker's got his muzzle on. I was out to the farm yesterday, and everything is green as green could be, and the horses are all just spending no time at all at the hay pile anymore. They're off to munching that grass. You know, they're definitely enjoying the, as Dr. Chang would say, they're enjoying the candy. That's for sure.
Yeah, like walking on Snickers bar. Well, hey, just to let you know what's going on in Kentucky, do you guys remember that tent caterpillar disaster in like the 2001-2002 breeding season in Lexington? I think like over 30% of the thoroughbred foal crop was lost, and they couldn't figure out why. And they were going through, do all these testing and all these different things, trying to figure out why horses were like losing the fetuses. They were slipping the foals were born not alive. And they found out that it was the tent caterpillars that were causing all the problems. And what those are is in the trees around the pastures, all those huge nests, I mean, they look like spider webs. Jen, do you know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about. They do. They look like giant, dense. They're weird looking.
Yeah, like spider webs that you would see in like a Johnny Depp movie. You know, it would be like cover the whole tree. And what it was inside those were tent caterpillars, is what they're called. And then the eggs would hatch, and the horses would eat the eggs or the some part of it, and they would lose the foals. Well, apparently the egg hatch is underway again. They got rid of tons and tons and tons of them, obviously, but on the wild cherry trees, now all those caterpillar numbers are increasing, and they have been over the past several years. So Kentucky, watch out. Those caterpillars are coming back, and it caused $336 million. This is why this is such a big deal. $336 million in loss of horses. And the economic loss that these caterpillars had. So they are working on getting it taken care of right now. But it was crazy. I just remember reading the news. I didn't even live there. People were freaking out about it. So that's happening again, too.
Yeah, even at the end of the foaling season last year, you heard them talking about the anticipated increase in the tent caterpillar population. And it's tough down here because the horses use those trees for shade. They don't have thousands of running sheds everywhere. They just have these ginormous, you know, trees. These trees are hundreds of years old. They're huge. And that's what the mares hang out under for shade all the time. So they can't very well go cutting down all the trees for many, many reasons. So what they do is they have to go around and they take a rod and they burn off the nest. So all that burns is a nest. Doesn't harm the tree in any way.
Oh, really?
It's very expensive and very labor-intensive. And, yeah, so I suspect there's some some additional gray hairs being formed on a lot of broodmare managers' heads right now.
Well, I was thinking too. I'm like, what do? You just spray it with pesticides?
Well, you can't spray
and then I'm
it,
like,
again,
well,
because the mares are hanging out under them. They can't spray the trees,
right?
Really.
And then you can't really cut the branches off because that'll kill the tree. So yeah, I guess that's gross. And then you have to like burn them, and that's gotta smell really bad.
It's not as bad as you think, actually, because we used to do it the same way in Pennsylvania, and we just did it because they would invade the trees around your home, and they're just gooey and disgusting and make a mess everywhere. And it's not as bad as you would think. You would think that you're burning all those little tiny caterpillars, but it's not all that bad.
All right. Well, hey,
well,
I know.
Do you remember, Jamie, gypsy moths?
Gypsy moths?
Yeah. No, you're probably too young. But back in, when was it, the 70s, gypsy moths came through the Northeast, through Connecticut and through Pennsylvania, and they just wipe out everything. I mean, they'll wipe out whole forests of trees. And, you know, it was just amazing the devastation of gypsy moths. And they also have those tent-like caterpillar deals going. But one of the things I remember as a kid was my grandparents had a stone house. And the way the gypsy moths would work is when they would come out as moths, they would land for a period of time on a structure. The entire side of the house was covered in moths. You could not see the wall. And they used to get the hoses out and hose them off. The size
Ew.
Of their houses. I mean, that's how thick they would be. They would be that thick. It was so bad that at times it was hard to drive because when the moths would be out for a couple of days, they would be out as moths. It was difficult to drive. It was that bad. So, yeah, gypsy moths are another thing that are interesting, less to the horses and more to the trees. So, and they were disgusting. I remember when we had them in Pennsylvania too.
Girls, I get one moth in my house and it shuts my whatever I'm doing down. I'm like, I gotta get the moth out. I can't stand it. I can't imagine a wall full of them. I'm like, close the door, because out here we have so many of them that if you have the lights on in your house and we have these big French doors in the back of the house, and if you open that, you're like, come on, puppies. You know, you open it and three moths zoom in, and then it's like, I can't even focus. I have to get them out.
You could not live in Florida, could you, with all the kinds of flying insects they have down there? You wouldn't like that at all.
No, but you know what? No. At least when I lived in Georgia, and we had fleas and roaches. And I thought that was the worst thing ever. Fleas and roaches were like the big problem. Okay, then you move to Phoenix. There's no fleas and no roaches. Awesome. No, there's black widow spiders and scorpions. At least things in Georgia didn't try to kill me.
That's true.
But oh
and
my
apparently
gosh.
Rattlesnakes. Don't forget the rattlesnakes.
Well, the rattlesnake thing, I don't even want to talk about it. I'm afraid to go ride in the desert now. Apparently, it's rattlesnake season. This is when they all start coming out because they're really hungry. That's nice, huh? They're hungry. Oh, poor little things. Feel so sorry for them.
Well, you know how we're always talking about these horses getting loose, and we kind of make a joke about it. Well, one of the reasons it's not so much of a joke is a family of a woman killed in a car crash has filed a wrongful death lawsuit. Lois Reeves died in January when her car hit a horse that was in the middle of Kentucky 52 in our state, in a rural Kentucky, and her daughters have now filed a suit against the horse's owner, saying their negligence led to Reeves' death. And that's one of the things that we really have to be careful about is, you know, that's a tough thing that you really have to make sure your horses are you know, not running around on the road, because this kind of thing that can happen. And, you know, I bet you they could be fine. They could win this lawsuit. You know, it's something you do have to be careful of. And on that vein, though, I ended up with about five horses loose stories today. So, you know, they're still out there by the dozens. It's amazing how many show up. Well, let's take a break for our sponsor this half hour, and let's get to our first guest.
All right. Well, today's show is brought to you by Pfizer Animal Health. And you can help protect your horse with Pfizer Animal Health's West Nile Innovator. This is the first vaccine developed to help protect against equine West Nile virus. West Nile Innovator is available in several combinations with Eastern, Western, and Venezuelan equine encephalomyelitis and tetanus for convenient protection. So you can contact your veterinarian about West Nile Innovator. It's almost time for spring vaccines, people. It's coming right now, so you might as well go ahead and check it out. You can talk to your vet about West Nile Innovator and other Innovator family vaccines, or learn more at PfizerAH.com. That's PfizerAH.com.
Beaker had his shots last week. He got his vaccine. Yes, he did. He's all protected now, and I'm sure he was thrilled about it. But he's all protected now and good to go. So we have a safe pony.
Oh, that's good. Yes, my warm blood's going under the knife on Thursday and then getting all the shots, too. And when I say under the knife, he's getting his teeth floated.
Oh.
So he's getting his teeth floated.
I thought he was yelling, but...
No, I said that to Chad yesterday. I'm like, poor Demure. He goes under the knife on Thursday. He's like, oh, what are we paying for now?
Speaking of paying for things, one of the things that people have to pay for inevitably in their life is college. And we have coming up next Sarah Coleman of the Georgetown College Equine Scholars Program. And I met her a couple weeks ago, and we had a nice chat. And I thought, you know, this is something that we haven't talked about at all on the show yet. Is, you know, how are there scholarships available for people, you know, for horsey girls? And what are they and how's it work? So that's why we decided to have Sarah on here. Good morning, Sarah. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you so very much. I appreciate the invitation.
No problem. Tell us first about Georgetown College. First of all, Georgetown College is about 5 miles north of the Kentucky Horse Park here in central Kentucky. Correct?
It is. We are actually the official educational partner of the Kentucky Horse Park, which we're very proud of. We have a couple different options with it whenever they open, you know, seasonal employment positions or internships or also any internships. There are 35 different equine entities located at the National Horse Center on the Kentucky Horse Park property. Whenever they're looking for interns, volunteers, anything like that, we usually get a first crack at it, which is wonderful for our students. You know, they've done myriad internships down there, everything from the Pasofino Horse Association, the United States Pony Club, the Pyramid Horse Society, within the different breed barns and that kind of thing at the horse park. It's really great to have such a wonderful resource. Like you said, I think it's 8 miles exactly from our campus. It's really nice. But
tell us about Georgetown. How big a school is it? And, you know, I don't know much about Georgetown. Actually,
I know it's a well-kept secret. I actually lived in Lexington for about 4 years before I had ever come up to Georgetown as well. And now I don't know how I missed it, honestly. We are a small liberal arts college. We have about 1,300 students. We are residential, and we offer 40-plus majors here at Georgetown. And I think really our key strength is that the class size is very small, so you truly get one-on-one attention within your classes. You know, for me and the other faculty, I'm staff, but the other faculty members here, if we have a student who is too far from home to go home for, you know, fall break, Thanksgiving, anything like that, everybody is very willing to welcome the students into their homes. You know, they come over for Thanksgiving dinner. They come over and watch games with us, you know, that kind of thing. So it's a really unique setting here. I went to a larger public university, and it's very different from the experience that I had. And it probably would have saved me a lot of tutoring, honestly, in math if I had been able to approach my professor and say, you know, hey, I'm having a problem with this. Can you help me? It's really nice because they catch students who are having potential difficulties before it gets to the point where, you know, they can't get their grades back up, which is really nice.
And now the Equine Scholars Program, what is that?
I am in love with this program. It is very different from any other equine program in the country. We do not offer a degree. We don't offer classes. And we're actually not hands-on, which I know sounds completely backward in the equine industry. But really what we do is, and the students who are in our program right now, we have 39, can be any of the 40-plus majors at Georgetown, and then we show them how to combine that within the equine industry. So, for example, if we have a student who thinks they want to go pre-law, we would have them intern and job shadow with an equine lawyer. If somebody thinks they want to be a nurse, we'll send them down to Rudin Riddle or to Haggard, and they'll job shadow or do, you know, some kind of internship with them where they're, you know, following equine anesthetists, equine surgeons. You know, they can ride around with some of the vets at these bigger clinics. And it's everything, really. You know, we had a kinesiology major who actually is an equine masseuse right now. You know, we have accounting majors who want to eventually work on large farms or, you know, be in the fifth third lend equine lending department, things like that. So it's very unique, but we like to say it's very applicable. You know, if they want to run a boarding barn, that's totally great, but we want to teach them the, you know, the books behind it so that they can always run in the black and not, you know, run into any issues with money and economics and things like that. So the way our program works is we do tons of field trips and we have all kinds of speakers come in. We attend different events within the equine community that we think would pique the interest of our students. And we really want it to be, we like to tell them that they can operate when they leave this program in Georgetown, they can operate either in the real world or they can work in the equine world. And it's very nice for them to be able to flip-flop back and forth, you know, if they decide maybe they don't want to work in the equine world, they want to try, quote unquote, the normal world for a while, their degree makes them extremely marketable to that side of the world as well.
Well, Jamie, I have an idea. You know how morning shows always have interns that they abuse and they do silly, stupid stuff? We need to get an intern from Georgetown College so we can abuse them.
We would love it. Love to send you some.
That would be the greatest thing ever. And then they'd realize that the room, they would learn, however quickly, that it might not be as glamorous as they were hoping. Like, I work for radio. Really? Where do you work? In Glenn's basement?
But, you know, truly, like that, you know, that is what we want them to see. We would love for the students, you know, who maybe want to go pre-vet, we want them to get out there in the field and be job shadowing a vet before they go into vet school, drop a ton of money to get through, and then get out in the working world and be like, oh, my gosh, what did I just do? You know, or law school or anything like that.
But you keep using that word, Sarah, the real world. And I really don't think Jamie and I exist in the real world. I think we're kind of in this la-la land someplace.
Well, I think sometimes a lot of horse people are, and I'm right there with you.
So I like that idea. I think we should get an intern. Now I'm sold on it. We should have
an
intern.
Good.
Yeah. We'll have them fill in for me so I can take a week off.
That would be wonderful.
So now, is there actually, it's called a scholarship or a scholars program. So it's not actually a scholarship.
Well, they do get a scholarship for being in our program. We give them $1,000 a year to be in the program. And then if they have any other equine-oriented internship, whether it's from Pony Club, USEA, USCF, 4-H Equine Club, anything like that, we will match that up to $1,000 a year as well. So technically they could get $3,000 a year to be in our program.
Okay, well that's pretty good. And now do most of these kids also have horses and keep their horses around here, or are most of them not with horses when they're here?
It kind of depends. We're a non-breed-specific, non-discipline-specific program. So we have everything from, we have some gated girls, we have some Western guys, dressage, hunter jumper. A lot of our kids just ride for pleasure. Some of them are very interested in the thoroughbred industry and have never necessarily sat on a horse or had any, you know, true hands-on experience, but they're interested in, you know, maybe the bloodlines and the bloodstock agents and that kind of thing. So I would guess probably about maybe a little over half bring their horses with them here. And some of them, you know, we're very geographically diverse in this program. You know, we have students from Washington State, Idaho, Hawaii, Delaware. And amazingly to me is it's most of those kids who are out of state are who bring their horses here. So it's really, you know, it's really interesting to see the difference, I guess, when they come in.
So how many people, I think you would have a lot of competition being a college just outside of Lexington, which is a college town. Obviously, University of Kentucky is there, and also the community college that filters right into that, Lexington Community College. So how many students do you have currently enrolled in this program at Georgetown?
Sure. We have 39 in our program right now, and we actually just did our 2011 acceptance. We had 44 students apply, and we accepted 21 of them. So the really, you know, and it's, I absolutely agree with you. And right until right before the World Games, I was kind of like, oh, my gosh, you know, it's difficult. You know, we compete with Midway. We compete with Moorhead, Western, UK. And what was really interesting that happened right before the World Games is a bunch of all equine representatives from all eight colleges in Kentucky that offer some format of equine program got together and said, hey, we really want to have a representation at the World Games, but we can't afford a booth. They were $20,000 for a booth space. None of our programs
Holy
could absorb
moly.
That kind of cost. Yeah, it was quite expensive. So what we did is, and many, many thanks to UK and U of L, they kicked in the money for it, and we were able to get the booth space and get this big, beautiful booth designed, and it represents every one of our programs. Because truly, you know, a person who would be happy in my program would not be happy maybe at UK in their ag program. Or the person who's happy at Midway and wants to get an equine science degree and wants more hands-on stuff would not be happy at Georgetown. And that is, I've really learned, you know, coming from the horse side of it, it seems we seem to be so fractured into disciplines and this and that. It was really nice to come into this higher education opportunity where all eight of those schools are represented in that booth, you know. And what we do is, when I, like, I went to Pony Club convention in January, I took the booth, I represented all eight colleges. You know, if it goes to Quarter Horse Congress, obviously that's a 3.5 week long show, we'd have to rotate out who mans it. But everyone there understands that, you know, we're not all competing for the same people. The goal is just to get them in Kentucky, you know, to get them here and to experience the horses, to see how amazing this industry is. That's the goal. Mm-hmm. And whether they're here at Midway or at Moorhead, we just want them here.
Now, I know Midway has an intercollegiate team. Do you guys have an intercollegiate riding team as well?
We do. We actually just started our hunt seat team. It is completely student-driven, so it's considered a club sport. They're required to do all their own fundraising, all their own, you know, transportation to and from horse shows and that kind of thing. And it's actually coached by Nori Shuffle of Shuffle Ridge Farm in Paris, which is about maybe 10 or 15 minutes from campus. So they're really just kind of, you know, testing the waters and that kind of thing. I believe there's only four or five of them on the team right now, but I keep on telling them it's so much better to start small and get big than to start big and be overwhelmed.
Yeah, that's true. And as far as Georgetown goes, is it – for some reason, I lived in Kentucky, and I went to college there, and I just remember Georgetown being a like more of an agricultural school. Now, has that changed, and what's tuition?
It is, I believe, and I apologize, I'm not an admissions person, so I might be telling you the wrong numbers. I believe it's $32,000 a year. That being
okay.
said, I about had a heart attack when I first came here because I'm like, oh, my goodness, how can anybody afford to go here? They are so incredibly good about giving grants and scholarships that truly, truly, I think we only have maybe two or three students on the entire campus who are full pay. You know, they try to make it as affordable as possible for anybody who wants to come here. And actually, with regards to the ag side of it, I honestly can't speak to that because I did not know about it either until about 4 years ago. But I really don't believe it has been mainly ag
okay.
before.
I could
I
be wrong.
I could be
confused.
I think you might be confusing it with another school. One of the neat things about Georgetown is Georgetown as a town has a couple of unique things, and they are one of the very few towns in this country that has what annually, can you tell us?
The Festival of the Horse?
The Festival of the Horse, and they have a horse parade.
Yes.
Oh,
wonderful.
Yeah. They have a horse parade.
It's
we went to the first
good.
Year we were here, and we ate our hot dogs and watched the horses go by. Now, it's not a great big horse parade, okay? This isn't like the circus parade up there in Michigan or wherever, but it was kind of fun. It was fun. It was very hometowny, and, you know, you can get barbecue, and everybody brings their horses out and barely brushes them and rides them through town. So it was fun. It was fun to do. But Georgetown is a quaint little town. Of course, Georgetown is known around here as the town that houses the largest employer, and that's Toyota. Toyota has a huge factory here and employs 7,000 people. So that's one of the claims to fame of Georgetown around this area. Okay, so now Jennifer's going to be getting back to you about sending these interns over so we can abuse them. We'll get back to you about that. And if any of them are interested in communications, we can show them how not glamorous it is and talk them right out of it.
You know, you got to start somewhere. My radio career was started as an intern, and my job for the sports talk station that I worked at was to take the cars, get them washed and oil changes and vacuumed and cleaned. So you got to start somewhere.
Exactly.
All right, Sarah, thank you very much. We appreciate you being on with us. And what website, is there a website they can go to?
It is. It's kind of a long one. It's http://equinescholars.georgetowncollege.edu.
Okay, and we'll put a link to that in our show notes as well. That's equinescholars.georgetowncollege.edu. Thank you so much, Sarah. It's good to talk to you again.
Thank you. You too.
Does that make you want to go back to college, Jamie?
No.
No, me either.
Not a bit. That was good. I'm good. I'm cool.
You know, but that, you know, it's kind of fun that they have that program for the kids, you know, so they can stay connected at really what's a non-horsey school, you know, can stay connected to other horse people and do horsey things. So, and, you know, they do have an opportunity here in Lexington. We have so many businesses and so much that revolves around the horse. It's kind of neat that they get to intern at places like at the medical centers and things like that.
Yeah, it's just cool because they seem to want to put you in the job to make sure you're not surprised when you graduate and do it. So I think it's a cool program. I'm glad we learned about it. Maybe it'll help somebody out there who's listening that hadn't decided where to go. I mean, I tried so hard to go to a couple different smaller schools in Kentucky, but again, I didn't have residency when I was applying out of college, but I wanted to go to, Midway, or what's the one out in Western Kentucky, Murray State. I thought, oh my God, they've got an equine program. It was so cool. They had a team and everything.
But you ended up at UK then, right? Didn't you end up at University of Kentucky?
I did, but I lived in Lexington for a year before I went to college. I graduated high school a little bit early and then went to a program at the Kentucky Horse Park. I did their KEI, their Kentucky Equine Institute that they used to have out there. So it was like a horse management school, and that was 6 months long, and then I just hung out 6 months and rode race horses and did every stupid job in the horse world until I had residency and then went to school, so I got the cheaper rate. I know, that's
there
kind
you
of
go. Well, that
neat.
Works. All right. Let's take a break for our daily song, and then we're going to be back with Lisa Wysocki talking about the 10 mistakes that horse people make. I'm sure there's more than 10, but we'll at least start there. And so next up, we have Ride My Pony by Marianne Kennedy. Enjoy, everybody.
Take the time to say goodbye. I just wanna ride my pony underneath the clear blue sky. That's the only kind of love I seem to understand. Just the two of us. The rain's burning in my hand. I see the light in his eyes. Like the wind. got to get right back home. I see the truth in his eyes, and I know who I am. I want to ride my pony, forget the things you said to me.
Kennedy, Ride My Pony. You can find all her music at mariannekennedy.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Jamie Jennings, along with me, Glenn the Geek. And today our show is brought to you by Pfizer Animal Health. And we're going to have a pretty special guest on in just a minute, Lisa Wysocki, to talk to us about the mistakes that horse people make. And I made a potential mistake yesterday, and I want to know if you think it'll be on the list.
Okay, all right, I'm ready.
Okay, so yesterday it was raining, so the horses were up in their stalls, and I can see right into their stalls from my living room, from my kitchen. So I look outside, and I see two of the horses fighting over the fence together, and they're just being horses, and they're kind of going back and forth at each other and whatever, so I didn't think anything of it. I walked out there a little bit later, and Jet, my thoroughbred, had a nosebleed. I mean, blood pouring out of the nose, and I'm like, oh my God, okay, he must have been fighting over the fence, and he hit his face on the side of the bars, and he fractured his nasal cavity, and so probably it's broken, and I'm going to have the vet out there, but stick a tube, because it's going to swell shut, or, oh my God, he's got a brain tumor, and it just ruptured, and so the brain tumor was like in there, or, oh no, sinus cavity tumor, he's never going to be able to breathe,
queen.
I'm going to have to spend thousands of dollars to have this tumor removed. So I'm like, okay, what am I going to do? I get him out of the stall, I walk him over to the light. He had a cut on his nose.
You're such a drama queen. You know that?
My horse's noses bleed a lot when they get a cut, and it was just right up inside. I'm like, let me wipe the blood off and try to see where it's coming from. And I'm like, it's coming from the end of the nose. So I wonder if drama is a horse person mistake. We'll have to find out in a minute right after Glenn tells us about another sponsor.
How does Chad even live with you? That's my question.
I don't know. He works a lot.
One of our favorite companies, Jennifer and I, that is Audible.com. Audible is the premier provider of digital audiobooks. Matter of fact, I started a new one the other day. I'm actually listening, Jamie, to Brain Gods. And it's James Lee Burke. I don't know if you've listened to any James Lee Burke. He does Dave Robichaux novels, which is about the detective down in a little town in Louisiana, down near where Michelle and Rick live, actually. So I love these books. He's a great writer, and the reader for these books is terrific. It's one of the neat things about listening to Audible books is the readers really they use different voices for the different people. And the good readers really put the book, they make it come alive. And listening to it, it's so much fun because you can do other things. I do it when I'm cooking, and when I'm cleaning, or when I'm
taking walks or ride my bike or whatever. You're riding your horse, you can be listening to books. And they have over 80,000 different books now available. All the bestsellers come out right away at audible.com. And as I said, you can do this when you're doing anything here at the gym, for those few of us that actually do that. Or if you're doing sweaty yoga, you could be having your earbuds in.
All right, we get it.
And Audible has a special offer for listeners of the Horse Radio Network. They are offering you a free audiobook. You can download a free audiobook and a 14-day free trial, and you can check out their service. And you can go to audibletrial.com/HRN. That's audibletrial.com/HRN. Or you can go to Horses in the Morning and follow the Audible banner on the right-hand side of the page. And we want you to give it a try. It's a lot of fun, and we think you're going to enjoy listening to it after you've listened to all the shows on the Horse Radio Network. You can listen to your Audible books. All right, that's great. I think that's it. I'm done.
Well, Lisa Wysocki called in, it was a while ago actually, that we talked to her about Horse Country, a celebration of country music and the love of horses, where we talked about we kind of celebrity stalked a little bit, like, okay, what was this person like and what kind of horses do they have? It's a country music book about horses, or a horse book about country music artists. I can't figure out which one. A little bit of both, probably. But Lisa is an author, equine clinician, a motivational speaker. She trains horses. She consults for therapeutic riding programs across the country. And she is on with us right now to tell us the top 10 mistakes that horse people make. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning. How are you guys?
I'm doing good. So we're great. Did you hear my story about my mistake I made yesterday?
I was laughing so hard I almost fell off my couch. It was great.
Have you done something like that where you just get overly dramatic and panic? I mean, it's our babies, and we want them to be okay.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, everybody does. Everybody does, you know, and that in a roundabout way, that is one of the no-nos that can really get us into trouble, because when you're panicky, your horse picks up on your emotion and he says, oh, my leader, my human is upset. I should be upset. And so then we get into trouble.
That's why he ran backwards as fast as he could go when I tried to look at his nose. There's something wrong with my nose.
You know, they're so intuitive, and they pick up on everything that we're projecting. They just project it right back at us. And, it's really hard in those circumstances to keep calm and to keep your energy where it needs to be. But it's so important, because your horse is going to just come right back at you with whatever you're throwing out there.
So aside from that and me making mistake number one, so this list, tell us about this list or top 10 things that you've come up with.
Okay, so this list, I mean, we could have 100 things on this list, but this is a compilation of the things that I see most often either at my clinics or I go to a barn or people email me or on Facebook of things that happen. And just based on that, I compiled this list of 10 things. And, you know, I've done every one of these things, and probably most of the listeners have too. Fortunately, it doesn't always result in a bad ending, but it can. And that's why I'm hoping that everybody will kind of listen up and kind of think about things a little bit differently after this segment.
Okay, so I'm going to take notes. I've got my notepad and my pen right here.
Because
I'm going to take notes and write down the things I have never done, because clearly I've never done any of the things that you're about to talk about. But I'm just going to write them down in case anybody I know has done these things.
Of course. Okay, so are you ready for number one?
I'm ready. Number one.
Number one is either leading or lunging with your elbow away from your body. And I can't tell you how many people I've seen with either a torn rotator cuff or a dislocated shoulder. And, you know, it doesn't take much. If your horse pulls at just the wrong angle and your elbow is away from your body and not tucked into your waist, you can cause severe damage to your shoulder or your elbow. And it's such an easy thing just to think about. You know, you're going through a gate maybe, and you let that elbow get away, and your horse kind of pulls to get some grass, and boom, all of a sudden you're in the emergency room.
You know, I'm actually sticking my arms out right now trying to think about it. And I mean, I always have my elbows by my sides because one holds the lunge line and one holds the whip, and it kind of helps you brace a little bit.
It does.
With your elbows against your sides. Yeah, but I'm trying to hold my arms out and think about doing it like that, and maybe sometimes I ride like that, but I don't think I lunge like that.
That's
so
good.
Okay.
That's good. Yeah. The second thing, and we've all done this, and it's becoming a huge problem that I'm seeing a lot, particularly at my clinics or people who email me, is riding with your cell phone on or talking or texting on the phone while you're riding. And, you know, cell phones are for our convenience. And, you know, so we just have integrated them so fully into our lives that they're just right there a part of us. But the problem is I've talked to a number of people who have fallen off when their cell phone rings, because the first thing you do when your cell phone rings is you stop your horse. So all of a sudden you're conditioning your horse to stop whenever they hear your cell phone ring. And they're going to react to that.
I never thought about that, but that's true. It goes back to what Shauna teaches with the conditioning.
Quicker, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So you're conditioning your horse that, oh, the cell phone's ringing, I better stop. And so, you know, if you're not prepared for that, and my goodness, if your cell phone rings right when you're getting ready to go over a jump, you've got a problem. So
So what I'm hearing right now, and I'm probably guilty of this too, is what you're actually saying, because clearly I cannot go without my cell phone for more than 10 minutes. I think that as I'm cantering around, I need to not stop cantering and go ahead and answer it while I'm galloping around and jumping.
I don't think that's what she's saying at all.
That's
I really don't think that's two of this.
Because... well, the obvious solution is maybe to put your phone on silent or vibrate, you know, because then you know. Of course, when it vibrates and you jump out of the saddle, you're conditioning your horse to something else.
Or do what Jennifer does, and she just leaves it in the car and doesn't even take it into the barn with her because she considers that her quiet time, and you really don't need to get a hold of me during that time.
See, Jennifer's my hero. I love that. That is fabulous. The other
Jamie's
problem
going, no way in hell I'm doing that.
Well... You know, there's two sides to that. There's the one side where I was teaching a student, and I don't let my students have their cell phones anymore because she fell off right on her butt and had the cell phone in her back pocket and actually ended up with a pretty good bruise. And I was like, that's what you get for riding with your cell phone. And here I am with it in my back pocket riding around. And the other part of that is I go out in the desert a lot, you know, and it's just safer to have a phone. So You know, keeping it on silent is probably a better idea. Darn
yeah,
it.
Well, and you know, the other thing too is when you're talking on the phone or texting, which a lot of people do and really shouldn't, it means that you're distracted. And a lot of horses, because you're not being that leader that we talked about just a minute ago, they're going to take advantage of that. They know that you are not paying attention to them. So they're either going to maybe trot back to the barn and all of a sudden you don't have your reins, you don't have, you know, your concentration because you're busy trying to text, and then your horse kind of goes a little faster than you think, and you're trying not to drop your $500 new Android phone, and it gets to be a real problem. And then you get the other kind of horse who is maybe a little bit insecure, and because you're not being that leader, they can become a little bit spooky. And it's just about a good scenario any way you look at it.
Okay, so no cell phones when you ride, unless you're on a long trail and then put it on silent.
No texting and driving, Jamie. No texting and driving.
Yes. Yes.
Fine.
So number three is not taking care of your tack or checking your tack every couple of months. And I see so many people who say, oh, you know, my girth broke or my rein broke and I fell off. And I ask, well, when was the last time you checked the condition of your tack? It's like, oh, well, when I bought it 4 years ago. And we just take it for granted that it's going to be there for us when we need it. And if you don't,
and you know what? You ask that same person, Lisa, when was the last time they cleaned their tack? It was 4 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and it's just something we just don't think about enough, and we're so excited to go out to the barn and spend some time with our horse that we don't take care of, you know, the things that go along with that horse, like your tack.
Okay,
so
take care of your tack.
Take care of your tack. Okay.
So the next thing is riding in a saddle or a bridle that doesn't fit your horse. And I do a lot of clinics, and I am not a master saddle fitter, I will say that up front, but I do some basic saddle fitting, and I easily 9 out of 10 horses who come to my clinics or that I go look at if I'm looking to purchase for a client, those saddles don't fit. That's 90% of the saddles don't fit the horse. And the problem is, you know, if you're wearing a pair of shoes that don't fit, I mean, you become uncomfortable, and all of a sudden, you know, that uncomfort turns to pain, and, you know, then that pain makes you cranky. So when you've got an uncomfortable, cranky horse, you're going to have behavior problems. And when you have behavior problems, right, people fall off.
Yeah, that's true. And it's a huge problem. I'm kind of a little bit particular about saddle fit. And it is, first of all, they get cranky, yes, but also when their back starts to hurt, they start evading that and they start moving in a different way. And then they can hurt themselves that way too, you know. Horses with back pain or hock pain have back pain and vice versa. So it's definitely incredibly important. And I know it's expensive, but at least, you know, do something to, you know, reflock the saddle, have somebody out to take care of your saddle or figure out a way to put pads on it so it's not so uncomfortable. That's definitely an important one.
Yeah, and, you know, the saddle that's fitting your horse right now today in March of 2011 probably, or there's a very good chance, it didn't fit your horse last fall because your horse is in a different condition or shape 6 months ago than it is now. So I always tell everybody, check your saddle fit every 3 months, because as your horse changes condition and as your horse ages, the body shape is going to change. And another thing that I see particularly in the therapeutic riding industry is you'll get horses that have different muscular shapes on the left and the right side because either of the job that they did or because for 15 years, people have been getting on that horse from the ground, and so I'm a big proponent of using a mounting block so that you're not putting that torque or twist on the horse's back.
Yeah, it's definitely better for him. But we're talking with Lisa Wysocki, and she's given us the 10 mistakes that horse people make, and you mentioned they get a little bit older. You know, my last horse, as he got older, his withers got taller. He grew.
Yeah.
He grew with the wither.
So, well, I don't know if he grew with his wither or if his back dropped.
Listen, Lisa, let me dream, okay? He grew. As he got older, he grew. He got taller. So so he became a
I'm
challenge.
I'm still growing too, Lisa. I'm still growing too. Just want to throw that in there.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd like to think.
So,
I'd be happy if it was only my back that was dropping, to be honest.
Disadvantages of aging.
Glenn, your feet are getting smaller. Is what's happening? They're drawing backwards. That's why you can't see them.
Oh.
That's what it is. I like that. I'm going to stick with that.
All right, Lisa, what's next?
Okay, the next one is going through the gate the wrong way. And this, I have a really short story to tell you about this because, as I said, I've done every one of these things that we're talking about. You always should go through a gate the direction that you're going. So if you're going into the arena, the gate should swing in. And now, not everybody has the luxury or the advantage of that because some gates only go one direction. But I went into a round pen with a horse a couple years ago, and it was a halfling, a really stocky, you know, short kind of a breed. And we had a Western saddle on, and I pulled the gate toward me as we were going in. So, and I didn't pull it open far enough. And as we walked in, the Western stirrup got caught on the little hook that was part of the gate hinge. Mm-hmm. And as we walked in, this little halflinger who had a Western saddle and also a breastplate on actually pulled the round pen into the round pen itself. And all of a sudden we're standing in the center of a round pen that's completely collapsed.
Ooh.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's too many bad stories we could go into as far as having a gate, you know, when the horse drags it closed on their belly, you know, and they pull it shut with their stirrups or whatever, that kind of thing is super dangerous. So just, you know, I unfortunately have a gate that only opens that way, but I just make sure that it is completely open before I lead a horse through.
Yeah, because the horses are a lot wider than we think they are. So
can I throw out another one that's related to that?
Sure.
One of my pet peeves, and I learned this, I think, from Pony Club Jennifer, my wife, is when you go into a field, and we have seen this happen so many times with our boarders over the years, when you put your horse out in the pasture, turn the horse around to face you before you take the halter off or you unhook the lead rope, because I can't tell you how many faces have almost been lost by doing it the other way. And a horse can still turn around and kick at you, but at least it gives you a couple more seconds to get the heck out of the way.
Yes.
I cannot tell you how many times we've seen that almost be a disaster.
Yes. Yeah, and the other thing that goes along with that is if your horse is really rambunctious and is trying to take off and you don't feel stable, just let go. You know, don't let the horse drag you. I've seen that too. And the horse is in a field, let the horse go, and you can always catch it later.
Yeah, the lead rope's going to stop him.
Yes.
Eventually.
Yeah. Eventually, yes. Yeah. So this next one, a lot of people are going to get upset with me about, but I feel really strongly about not playing with your horse's nose. And a couple of things. There are a lot of horses. This encourages horses to be really mouthy. Now, not every horse is going to pick up on that, but the big kicker for me is that it encourages your horse to invade your space. And every human should have a bubble around them that is their personal space that horse is not invited into unless you specifically invite them into. So if you're playing with your horse's nose, then all of a sudden it teaches your horse to kind of invade that space. It's a sign of disrespect, and then all of a sudden your horse is not going to consider you a leader. And then we have all the behavioral problems that go along with that.
Okay.
So.
Are you guilty of that
all
one,
right.
Jamie? You guilty of that one?
Well, she's really quiet.
I'm actually keeping a scorecard over here, and so far she's been guilty of almost all of them. So I wanted to see if she was guilty of this
thing. You see, here's what I was just thinking about, and that's why I was a little bit quiet, is yesterday when I had to inspect my horse's nose, he wouldn't let me anywhere near it. But he was like, no, you're not touching my nose. So I'm thinking, I must not play with his nose enough because he wouldn't let me touch it when it was cut. So
no, I
anyway,
think it was more the whole energy that you were projecting out there, like, I'm really panicked,
like,
and the horse is like, I'm panicked.
He's got a tumor. He broke his face.
He's going to die tomorrow.
Person, and I don't want to be around that.
And all Chad's doing is going, oh, another vet bill. So, no.
What are we doing
okay,
now?
Number seven is a messy barn aisle, and it doesn't have to be messy to cause problems. For example, I was looking at a horse about a year ago, and it was a younger horse. And as the owner was leading the horse out of the stall into the barn or into the aisle, out of another stall, a raccoon walked out. And this horse just stopped and backed up into a wheelbarrow and did a backward somersault over the wheelbarrow.
Ooh.
Yeah, and if the wheelbarrow hadn't been there, you know, nothing would have happened. But, you know, this poor little horse ended up having to have a lot of chiropractic work afterwards to get him back where he needed to be. So, you know, just make sure there's nothing in your barn aisle that absolutely doesn't have to be there. You know, if you can move stuff out of the way, and even your grooming box, just keep it away as far as you can from your horse.
Absolutely.
Number eight is, and this is an obvious for so many of us, but there are a lot of us who just don't, and it's not wearing your helmet. And I have a really good friend who is a riding instructor and hopped on a little pony bareback without her helmet and somehow managed to fall off the other side and hit her head on a brick wall and ended up with 14 staples in the back of her head. This is
insane. You know.
And go ahead, Glenn.
Well, I was just going to say there were two stories in the news. You know, I read all the horse news that comes out every day, and there were two stories in the news today of two different women who were out trail riding. Horses bolted, and they ended up headfirst into a tree, no helmets, and both of them died.
No.
That was just yesterday. I cannot tell you how many stories I read every day of people that are hurt or killed riding horses, and that was just in the United States. And that was two yesterday, you know, and they didn't, of course, they never tell you in the article whether, you know, a helmet would have saved her or not. But, you know, the one article did say they were not wearing a helmet. And I assumed that the other one, judging by the pictures they had of her riding as part of the story, she was not wearing a helmet. So, you know, would that helmet have saved those two women? You know, there's a good possibility it would have.
Yes.
You know, so.
Definitely.
You know, it's just such an inherently dangerous risk that we're taking by climbing on the back of a live animal. And anything can happen. I don't care if it's your trusty old show pony, but I swore that I would never ride without a helmet. The day that I climbed on a client's horse, super calm, no problem, perfect horse, and I walked him around and picked up the trot. He had gotten shod the day before, and he hadn't been turned out since then. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but I picked up a trot. He took four steps and did a somersault. Just out of the blue, fell over. I mean, just tripped and did a forward flip. And I rolled off to the side, and I said, you know, I mean, I was wearing a helmet then, but I said, you know, how many times do I just hop on without even thinking about it? And from that day forward, I will not ride a horse without a helmet, because stuff happens. But this is, you know, you could go over a million horror stories that happen with people not wearing their helmets. And unfortunately, there's just some people that are not, they just won't do it. I took a lesson, Lisa. I went and rode cutting horses a month ago. And
that's so much fun.
Everybody, oh my God, it was a blast. But everybody made fun of me looking like the little English rider up there with my helmet cutting horses. And I'm like, okay, wait a second. You're going to tell me that I'm going to climb on a horse that is about to zip back and forth so fast that I may not be able to keep up with it, and we're chasing cows that have horns. This is a really bad idea to do without a helmet. So make fun of me all you want. I'm wearing my helmet, and, you know, that's just the way that it is now, and that's the way it has to be. Unfortunately,
hey, Lisa,
there are some people that won't.
Lisa, we make her wear a helmet when she's doing the show in the morning, just to be safe.
Well, that is awesome. I am so proud of you guys.
Yeah, protect our star.
I think the Western discipline, you know, it's the whole cowboy way, and, you know, cowboy up and be a man, the whole thing, and they're just not embracing the helmet philosophy as they should. But hopefully, one at a time, they will.
Yeah.
All right.
We'll find out.
So what's the last one?
Okay.
No, we're on number nine.
We're on
number nine?
Two real quick ones. One is number nine is not checking your pastures and your fences regularly. So many things can happen, you know, even a splintered board or, you know, those little moles that come in and dig holes all through your pasture and through your yard that your horse could put a foot in. I mean, again, every 3 months, every 2 months, every month, check your pastures. Make sure there's nothing fencing-wise or footing-wise that can harm your horse.
Yep, that one's important, and I'm a firm believer. Jennifer will tell you how obsessive I am about nails sticking out, because if there's nails sticking out, our horse will find it, cut himself.
Oh, of course. Of course. You can have a horse in a 30-acre pasture, and there's one nail, and they'll find it.
Yep. That's
yeah. So,
and
then the last one is not pushing yourself too far out of your comfort zone. You know, a lot of people will go to clinics, or they'll watch something on TV or listen to something, and they'll say, man, so-and-so is doing that, and I think that's really cool. I'm going to try that with my horse. And, you know, there's a build-up process to any skill that you or your horse is doing, and you've got to make sure that you're taking those baby steps up to building the skill. So, you know, if somebody is jumping a 2-foot fence and you've never jumped before, you probably need to do some ground pole work first. And, you know, if you feel uncomfortable about doing something, work with your riding instructor or your trainer to build up your confidence, because if you're not sure about it, you're going to transmit that uncertainty to your horse, and it's never, ever a good ending.
I totally agree with you there, but, you know, it's like John Lyon says, you don't start climbing the ladder in the middle. You know,
that's right.
You have to actually start at the bottom step and work your way up, as opposed to kamikaze jumping in the middle of the ladder and trying to make your way up. It's just not going to work. So, Lisa, these are all fantastic things to keep us basically in line. We've got, of course, this is the 10 mistakes that horse people make. Leading or lunging, keep your elbows in. Riding with your cell phone, don't do it. Take care of your tack. Make sure your tack fits. Always make sure that the gate is completely open if it doesn't swing the way you're going. Don't play with your horse's nose. They invade your space. Don't have a messy barn aisle. People, come on. Clean up. Wear your helmet. Check pastures and fences. And the number 10 reason was, tell us again.
Don't push too far outside your comfort zone. Start at the bottom and work your way up.
All right. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for being on our show. This is just awesome. People can check your website at lisawysocki.com. That is LisaWysocky.com. You can find out where she's going to be doing clinics. You can find her books. I know a lot of people bought your book, Horse Country, A Celebration of Country Music and the Love of Horses, last time you were on. So anything you want to plug today?
My other book, My Horse, My Partner, Teamwork on the Ground, book and DVD, you can find it on Amazon.com.
All right. And Amazon.com, you can find that by going to horseradionetwork.com. So thank you so much, Lisa, and you have a great week.
Thanks,
and
Lisa.
We'll talk back in with you soon.
Thank you guys so much. It was a blast.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Awesome. Thanks. So
she's really good.
I thought I talked fast
until I listened to Lisa.
She's got a skill.
But she is good. She knows what she's talking about, and she just really nails it. You know, we're going to have her on a regular basis because she just brings some good information. And, you know, we can all relate to every one of those because we've all either done them or we've seen people that have done them, you know.
Yeah.
So we can relate to them for sure. There's no question about that. Well, I wanted to, before we wrap up here today, do a couple housekeeping things. One is we had the Eventing radio show last night. Had Boyd Martin on for the first live call-in show. He got some calls. All girls, amazingly enough. No guys called. Funny how that works.
I didn't call. I resisted the temptation. I listened live, and I wanted to call and talk to him, but I figured I'd embarrassed myself enough the last time we talked, so I let Chris go ahead and take it. But it was an awesome show, and he really really answers some great questions about eventing and horse training and horsemanship and horse sense and definitely it's worth a listen.
You know, all different
studs
kinds of questions he had, yeah.
Training and how long does it take to get your horse from point A to point B and all that. It was great.
Yeah, it was pretty good stuff. And, you know, the only one that I found a little bit, I don't know, I wasn't buying it, is he got the question. The question was, can you actually make money, you know, being a professional rider? And he was like, oh, yeah, it's easy. It's no problem at all. You have to work hard. And that's one of the things he said numerous times, I'm sure you picked up on, is, you know, he said, this is a 7-day-a-week, 20-hours-a-day job. And you're going to be doing it, and you're not going to have a life, pretty much. And, you know, he did make that clear. But he also made it sound like it was easy to make a darn good living, you know, six-figure income doing this.
It's because he does.
Yeah, exactly.
He does make good money.
I'm not sure that, you know, that's as easy for everybody that gives it a try. Although he was fair in the beginning of it and said that you have to have talent. You know, he did say that at the very beginning. He said you have to have talent. Don't even bother. If you don't have talent, you're not going to be a professional rider. Just forget it. So there has to be some innate, you know, born talent there too. You
and
can
I
learn
like
a lot.
How he,
but,
you know. Yeah, and he said, I love the question, what do you look for in an advanced level event horse? I think that was the first caller that he had. And just to hear him talk about when he goes and looks at a horse to buy, what are the things that he will not compromise on? And I found that one really interesting, too. So it's worth a listen. Is it eventingradio.com, Glenn?
Yeah, it'll be out later today. The recorded version will come out later today, and it'll be up there for everybody to listen to if you missed it live. But it was fun. I liked the dynamics of it, and it was fun for the 5 or 6 people called in, and a bunch were putting questions on Facebook and things like that. So I think it was fun for people that were listening too. So that we might be doing more of that as we get down the pike. As far as later this week on our show, we have tomorrow we have the Horse Health Report. Mandy Widrick is going to join us on Thursday to talk about her web picks. She's going to be doing a regular segment for us on the cool horsey sites and Facebook pages and things out there. And then I think you have a little bit of a report on our guest on Thursday. Patty Reeves, the owner of Mucho Macho Man, is going to be on with us. And you got a little report on that too, don't you?
I do. You know, there's a list that comes out of all the horses that have earned enough money to qualify to run in the Kentucky Derby. And they have a top 10 that has come out, and it was on the bloodhorse.com. I can go through that. But Mucho Macho Man, the owner that we're going to talk to, the owner of Mucho Macho Man is coming on with us on Thursday. And he is currently the 9-to-5 favorite for the Louisiana Derby. It's March 26th. to the tune of $1 million. So he's going to have some pretty good competition. 13 three-year-olds were entered in the Derby, so it is going to be the 10th race on the program. It's going to happen on, is that Saturday? Is it the 20th? Is that right?
Saturday
the 26th. So we're definitely pulling for him, and you know, he may just become our new Derby pick, considering that Uncle Mo's people won't talk to us. So
right,
they're a little bit busy, or whatever. We're easily swayed
here.
No kidding. Well, Uncle Mo is ranked number one, and by the way, this list that comes out has determined like every field since 1986. So I did want to mention number 14. I love the name. His name is Arch. 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 His name is Arch.
Arch. Arch.
Arch. Arch. Number 14. I thought that was kind of weird.
I wonder. Did you read though how many of the, you know, we always talk about the favorites going into the Kentucky Derby, but very seldom does a favorite ever win the Kentucky Derby, right?
Very rarely. I think the last favorite to win the Derby was Big Brown, and I think before that was in the, you know, early 2000s with Fusaichi Pegasus. It rarely happens. So, because there's 20 horses in the field, anything can happen. Look at Super Saver. I mean, who expected him to win? So we've got number one is Uncle Mo. He is currently the favorite, and he's got the highest amount of earnings, trained by Todd Pletcher. Mucho Macho Man, who we're going to talk to again, the owners on Thursday, he's currently number five, and he's tied with another interesting horse we got to keep an eye on called The Factor. And The Factor is like the O'Reilly Factor. Now Bill O'Reilly's behind that horse. So Mucho Macho Man has the Village People, and The Factor has Bill O'Reilly. And Uncle Mo is just, you know, he's Uncle Mo, but he's currently the leader. And that is I can give you the top 20 if you want, just email me about it. But it's pretty cool. Go to thebloodhorse.com and check it out. They're keeping you up to date on all the horses that are going to come in. I do love the horse's name, number 8, To Honor and Serve. I love that. I think it's neat. So, and he's trained by Bill Mott.
There you go.
There you go. That's going to be cool. We will definitely talk to them on Thursday. I'm super excited. And just wait till you hear the story of the trainer, Kathy Reedvo, for Reeves Thoroughbred Racing. We're going to have to talk to her about it because it is an amazing story where she came back from this transplant. Like, I mean, just it's just incredible. So we're going to talk to them on Thursday.
I think if Mucho Macho Man wins the Kentucky Derby, I see it. This is a movie in the making right here. The whole story behind it and the whole thing. And, you know, the whole Village People connect. I mean, the whole thing is just a story, you know.
It is.
I think it's the one. And they're supported by Horses in the Morning. What more could anybody ask?
I know Bob Costas is going to have a field day with the backstory on this one leading up to the Derby. So I like all the pre-race stuff because they're like, and then 5 years ago, this horse, you know, they love to get all in depth of like what's happened and get the drama of it all. So this one's going to have the best dramatic story by far.
I wonder who's the jockey on this one. Do we know? Is it the same jockey every time, or they've been riding different jockeys?
I don't know who the jockey is at all. Maybe
we'll have to get an update from the Big next time we have him on, too, about Mucho Macho Man and maybe the jockey and things like that. So we'll have to find out from the Big, too. He is the inside source over there at HRTV, and he'll be coming on with us again soon. Well,
the jockey is Rajiv Marah.
Changed jockey. Elabar Ibar Koa was his jockey, and he's the one who had gotten hurt a little while ago. So Rajiv has taken over the reins.
All right. There cool. you go. You want some info?
All right.
Jen, I'll get it for you.
Yeah, that's right. Jennifer is the Googler extraordinaire. She and you know who we're having on next week that's always a favorite of the shows here? And, you know, when I first asked her to come on, I wasn't sure you were going to like her, and I wasn't sure anybody was going to like her, and I wasn't sure if it was going to work. But you guys seem to just like her is Dr. Jen, the Love Doctor.
Yeah.
So she's coming on next week, and we're going to have her back. We haven't had her back in a while. And then it looks like the topic she's going to talk about was made. Did you design this right after Janie? I mean, it looks like the topic was made for you. When we care too much, horses train us instead of the other way around. Can we break the cycle?
Yeah, I definitely have one horse that can do no wrong. You want to climb on my back? Okay, that's fine. Come on.
I know. And see, everybody does that.
Yeah. I have all these horses in the backyard, but there is the one that just makes my heart pitter pat, and he can do no wrong. He does whatever he wants.
So I think that's going to be a fascinating topic. I'm looking forward to that, too. All right, that's about it for today. Remember, you can listen to our recorded show at horsesinthemorning.com. All of our shows can be found at thehorseradionetwork.com, including the Eventing Radio Show of Boyd that we were talking about there a little bit later today. You'll find it over there. The easiest way, and we don't mention this very often, but the easiest way to get the shows is to subscribe through iTunes. You can find them all on iTunes. Just go search in the podcast section for the name of the show, and you'll find them there. And what we never talk about for some reason is that if you go to horseradionetwork.com and click on the iTunes link on the left-hand side of the page, that is a master link of all the shows. So if you've subscribed to iTunes using the Horse Radio Network link, you'll actually get every show that we put out every week. So you don't have to have separate subscriptions to the different shows. So if you're a listener to almost all of our shows, that's probably the best way to do it. And we hardly ever mention that, so I wanted to remind everybody of that.
Thank you very much. If you missed the live show, listen to recorded version in any of those ways Glenn just told you, we'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 Eastern, 6 a.m. Phoenix time. Say goodbye, Glenn.
Goodbye, everybody. And remember what Lisa said, wear your helmet.